Good evening and welcome to the Bonafide Motor Show. I'm your host, Joe Fleming, also known as Sotor right now. Welcome to week 36 of lockdown, also week six of the Bonafide Motor Show. It's been great having everyone join us. Ginger Scotty had an interesting weekend last time. It's been so great having everyone join us on the show. The guests like you and having so much fun with the guest on the show, like tonight's guest is Dave Silliers. I think I say this every show. I really enjoy doing this. It has been, well, it's like the only way we can connect outside of our normal motorcycle trips. All we have these days is the internet. So here I am doing live shows in my little office. I think it's kind of tidy. I actually wanted to show you guys, I know in the podcast you won't be able to hear this, but that's called studio lighting, boys and girls. And there's my other one, my neat desk. Anyway, it's my little office. So this show is sponsored in partnerships with Motul. Last week, I did a little spot on one of the products that I love very much, which is the Moto Wash. Tonight's product, something I actually used today on my wife's car, the Perfect Seat. So I use this. She's got leather seats on her car. I also use this on my Harley. So when I need to get that seat looking extra clean, obviously it's the Perfect Seat. Also, the show is sponsored by Jack Black. I'm actually very low on Jack Black. So tonight it's sponsored by Rooibos Tea. So tonight's guest, we have Dave Silliers. He is very well known in the motorcycle industry of South Africa. He is part owner of ZA Bikers. He is a very great guy. I love seeing Dave. Whenever there is a new motorcycle being launched and Alan and myself are working the event, and when Dave's there, it's always a pleasure to see him. He always has a smile on his face and he's always got a story to tell. And we once got sucked into a long story about suspension with him at Roof of Africa couple years back. So I will not be asking him about suspension tonight. I'm going to be asking him about his travels because I know he knows Africa very well. And he's also got a lot. He's had a lot of motorcycles in his lifetime. I think on the website, it says he's owned over 270 motorcycles. I know that he doesn't have like a gallery. He doesn't have all 270 now, but he's had that many. So he definitely knows motorcycles really well. I would love to hear if he has his favorite motorcycle. Wednesday night, we have Rich Mulholland from Missing Link. He is, like I put on the Instagram the other day, he's that Scottish guy who's a speaker. He's very well known. He's very eccentric. I'm looking forward to having him on the show because he doesn't hold back. So very exciting. Luckily, we're allowed to curse on the show, so he'll be fine. And then Friday, I actually don't know how to say Charlotte's last name, but we have Charlotte. I don't know, but you'll have to go to our Instagram. She recently did a trip from London down. She was actually supposed to go down to Cape Town, and she had some problems along the way. So we're going to talk to her about that on Friday. So for those who are new to the show, we record all these shows each and every time, and they are now available on Apple Podcasts. So you can go to Apple and search Bonafide Moto Show, subscribe, and you will never miss an episode again. So if you have questions, I actually see someone already asked a question down here. Let's see. Oh, yeah. I actually meant to say that. So my son is playing Fortnite right behind me. Maddie, how's Fortnite going?
Good.
Yeah, sweet. So I'm sure you guys probably maybe heard him killing people, talking crap to his friends, but now I think you're going to hear my voice and not so much Maddie. So without further ado, Dave, I'm coming for you, buddy. So I'm going to send that friend request or connection over. Z-A, bye. And there's also Dave Silliers on this podcast that's watching now. And I figured out today, tonight, it's Dave's son. Dave!
Hey, Joe, how are you, bud?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I know. Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Oh, let me qualify. Actually, it can be when you can't do long trips on your...
Say that again? Looks like Dave is having connection issues. Dave, I don't know if you are on Wi-Fi, if you can hear me or... Yes, Kepernst, you can watch the show. Dave, are you on Wi-Fi or cellular data?
Wi-Fi, Joe.
You have a terrible connection.
Okay. We can try and improve that.
Yes, let's improve.
I have a lot of booster going, but let's see if we can fix that in the next 30 seconds.
Okay, cool. I'll wait for you. I actually noticed Dave has a cap on. It's a Triumph cap. I've got the same one. For those who've watched the show, Ride Motors Take Photos actually got this for me as a gift a few years back. And being an American, obviously, I love this cap. So hopefully Dave can find a new solution. And we can have a better connection, and because I can also hear echo.
All right.
Okay. We may have to connect to him again. Let's see. In the meantime, I'll open up my window. It's hot in here. Okay, I'm gonna drop this. Oop, are you back? I can hear you.
Right.
Okay.
We're almost sitting on top of the Wi-Fi booster, so.
Dave, I'm... Oh, okay, cool. I'm just going to disconnect, and then I'm going to add you back again. So just stand by.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, back in. Do we have to do anything?
Stand by, guys. Technical difficulties. This does happen from time to time, but not very often. Okay. How's that? That doesn't seem to be much better.
Should be.
There we go. You look a bit smoother.
What?
Yeah, it's kind of dropping in and out.
Yeah, it's really weird because we have where I'm sitting right now. There's very strong Wi-Fi. We're literally sitting a foot from the booster.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Well, it seems to be a little bit better now. It's not disconnecting as much. You took the shadow off.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a fancy little light right here. It's the only way I can wear a cap.
I was sitting in the dark. I was so messed up where I was.
Yeah. Dave, it's good to see you, man.
Yeah, likewise, Jack.
I know before lockdown, all the photos I thought they were of you. They were from your son, but it looked like he was getting ready for a triathlon.
Yes. Yeah, he plays big time in that space.
And are you a cyclist as well?
Yes, not so prolific lately, but in my past, running marathons and long distance cycling was a big part of my life.
Okay. It's so funny. I've been following Dave Silliers on Instagram for a while, and I saw he was a cyclist, and I was like, damn, Dave, good on you, man. You do ZA Bikers, you got a full-time job, and you're a cyclist getting ready for a triathlon. Mad respect. And then I realized it's your son. So Iron Man. So Dave Silliers, little Dave, is getting ready for an Iron Man. Much
Absolutely.
Respect.
Yeah, he's done a whole bunch of those, both locally and overseas. So, yeah, no, he's played big in that space.
I've got a lot of respect for those people. It's a whole other beast of endurance.
Wow, totally.
Yeah. So, Dave, I've only had the pleasure of knowing you for like 4 or 5 years, I think it is. So
yeah,
I've only known you as Dave from ZA Bikers. So
yes.
What I'd first like to know is, how did ZA Bikers come about?
Well, I actually got to know Simon Morton, who we all know and love, when my son, that's now the younger Dave, was planning to do a trip to Malawi. And he owned a Honda African Twin. And he kind of said to me one day, you know, it's no big deal doing a trip like that on a big adventure bike. For this to be a real adventure, I've got to try and maybe do it on a totally alternative, different kind of bike. And that eventually got us to Simon, who at that time was importing TVS, the little Indian motorcycles, the guys who make the 310 motor for BMW. He was importing TVS motorcycles into South Africa. And he hooked us up with a 160, which my son then rode to Malawi and back. And that's how Simon and I got to know each other. And our friendship grew from then. And then the idea of this ZA Bikers entity came about. There was no online motorcycle entity in the country. And it was really his kind of idea coming from the UK. He was very au fait with that sort of thing. And what we have is the result of that. So by kind of good fortune, we got way ahead of the curve there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was just looking through your website earlier, and there's so much content on there, and especially from you and the articles that you've written. There's a lot on there. So for those who are in South Africa looking at motorcycle content and reviews, go to ZA Bikers. Dave and Simon have done an outstanding job of reviews. And who's the one that rides the bikes, and who's the one that writes the articles? Do you guys do a little bit of both, or is it mainly you?
Yeah, I'm predominantly the one that rides and writes. Then Simon does all the editorial work. He does the odd review as well. But I think that the niche, you know, he's very much a kind of IT fundy. So the whole background to the website and making everything work and editing, that's absolutely what he does. And, you know, I've been riding bikes since I was 14 years old. So starting off on 50s and over the years, you know, riding all sorts of bikes to all sorts of places. That 280 or 290, it's probably about around 350 now.
What? 350?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. That's why I'm not retired, Joe.
Okay. So let me rephrase, just in case anyone missed that. And I did mention this in the beginning of the show, that on Dave's bio on ZA Bikers, it talks about, I think he calls a car a shopping cart. What do you call it?
A four-wheel shopping basket.
Yes, a four-wheel shopping basket. And that he's owned over 270 motorcycles. And now that number has been updated to 350.
Yep.
That's impressive. And how many? How many do you?
That's stupid, but yeah.
And how many do you currently? How many currently reside at your home?
Only three, eh?
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. I took a guess, And I told Al earlier, I said, I was like, I don't think he has any more than 7 bikes at the house. But it seems, you know, like the 1200 Scrambler came out. I believe you were one of the first to purchase that. And and now that one's sold. So tell me about your bikes. Is it about just wanting to try all of them out? What's your process?
It's kind of been a bit of a metamorphosis. And the problem that I have, Joe, is that many different types of motorcycles appeal to me. You know, you have guys who are dying-in-the-wool sport bike guys, and all you'll ever see them on is a sport bike. That's kind of where I cut my roots. But then by the same token, we've done 2 or 3 Tiddler tours where we've ridden 180cc bikes around Botswana up into the Caprivi and back again. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you I enjoyed those trips every bit as much as I did any other trip I've done on a big adventure bike. Dave and I went up to Elephant Sands for a long weekend on some scooters last year. Rode them on the Pans, and we loved that. So if it's got 2 wheels and a motor, I'm in. And there lies the problem, and that's why there have been so many, because so many different bikes. Often it's been owning a dirt bike, an adventure bike, and a sport bike all at the same time. And then maybe a kind of retro bike thrown in. Mm. That's just how it's worked.
And what 3 bikes do you currently have?
I've changed my Triumph Scrambler for a Tiger 800. Okay. I'm a big fan of the Tigers. This is my 3rd Tiger, and I absolutely love them. I just think functionally it's a better bike than, for me personally, and this will create a whole lot of argument, than the Scrambler 1200. Because it's for the kind of trips I do, it's easier to pack. The exhaust on the one side, the half pipe, very cool, looks great, but functionally it doesn't work that great. So the Tiger. Then I've got a Honda Cross Runner, which is, I've always loved V4 Hondas. Probably my favorite bike of all time would be my very first VFR 800 Honda, which goes back to I think it was a 98 model, the pre-VTEC model VFR 800. So I've always loved those bikes. I've got a Cross Runner. That one's not going to be there for too long. There's something else in the offing. I've got a GS 1200 Adventure, which I so want to dislike BMWs because everyone likes them, and I tend to be a bit contrarian. But that is truly a magnificent motorcycle. It just really, it's like a sports tourer with dirt road ability.
Yeah. I remember for years, like I mean, and I think I still classify GS riders as their own type of people. And for years, I would talk crap about the GS itself, but I had never ridden it, which is ignorant of me to do that. And then at the South African Motorcycle Festival at Kailami, I think like 3 years ago, we were sharing a stand with BMW. Bonafide Barbers was there cutting hair, and it was sort of like an added value to the experience. And there that you could test ride all the different bikes. And someone asked me, like, have you ever ridden a GS? And I said, hell no. And they said, look, why don't you take it out, go around the track, knock yourself out? And I was like, you know what, I'll do that. I was very impressed. From a track perspective, that bike handled so well. It was so fast. I could get low into the corners. It was a fantastic motorcycle, and I could see why, even on dirt, it's a great bike. It's a big bike, but it's very, very capable. So I do have respect for it. I'll leave it at that I have respect for the bike.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of bikes that you can ride really, really big distances in the day, because I tend to do that more often than not. And if I ever choose any one motorcycle to ride to Cape Town in on a day, the GS Adventure would just top that list.
Yeah,
super comfortable, super capable. It doesn't feel heavy when it's rolling. It feels flipping heavy when it stops. But yeah, just a great bike.
Yeah, I mean, we had an event in Cape Town last year in November, and I think it was like a 4 or 5 hour ride from Cape Town to the site. And I remember just putting the cruise control on like 200, and it was so smooth, so capable, very fast, great for touring, and I could see why you would choose that bike.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, but you know, the GS have evolved over 38 years now, Joe, so... You know, it's taken them a while, but I think they've got their recipe pretty dialed.
Yeah. And Dave, you recently had a trip at the end of last year to the Kalahari.
Yes.
So yeah, look, what bike did you take there? And tell me about this trip.
Well, we I did that trip on, it was always going to be a predominantly road-biased trip because we were taking someone along who didn't have real big bike off-road experience. And then he and I ended up doing a bit of that, and he handled it incredibly. But I did that on my cross runner. But we had a Bonnie Scrambler, and we Simon was on his Bonneville, which is, it's actually, what was it? It was a street 20, scrambler, which has been turned into a scrambler. And that's hopped right. them over a bit, and it's a lovely thing. So he was on that, and then Ryan, our other buddy, he was on a cross runner as well, but the previous model. Actually, a bike that I had owned previously. I tend to do that. All my mates ride bikes that I had.
Yeah, when I saw your scrambler, I was like, yeah. So tell me about the trip. I want to hear. I don't think I've chatted to you about it.
No, so that trip... We did a route that we quite like as a kind of week route, week-long route. We went, first night we stayed over at a little campsite in Palapia, which is just across the border. The second night we rode up near Rockhop. So we went past the Kamaraya Sanctuary. So you go Palapia, Sarawi, Kamaraya Sanctuary, and then we stayed at Rockhop's, which is on the Makadikadi Pans. Leaving about a 230-odd-k ride the next day into Mauen, where we camped there at a Rockhop's River Lodge, which was flipping amazing. I mean, Kalahari sunsets, you know for yourself, there's just nothing like it in the world. It's indescribable. And then we were in Mauen the next night. I think we only spent one night there, sort of... I took the guys who hadn't been to Mauen yet, took them around some of my favorite haunts there. And then we went to Planet Baobab, which is at Gweta, which is halfway between Nata and Mauen. Then we went to Elephant Sands. We split slightly because Simon and Bjorn were very keen to go on to the Pans. Ryan and I went on to Elephant Sands. And they ended up following a herd of impala, I think it was, or a springbuck, in fact, on the pan, and getting so disorientated and so dehydrated that they nearly died on the pan. It's just such a lesson to learn, you know. If you're not familiar with it, you're just having such a gas riding until you suddenly realize that I have no idea which way is home. And it was extremely hot. One of the reasons why I chose not to go on the Pans, because I've done that before. A few years ago, I rode across the Pans with a 690 KTM and realized that you can die there if you don't know what you're doing. So they ended up getting lost on the Pans, eventually backtracking by literally riding back on their own track when that dawned on them that that's what they should do, back to Nata Lodge. And they were so, I think, elated and dehydrated. I think they sank more beers than you could ever ride a bike with, just to get going again. And Ryan and I, we just had a most incredible evening at Elephant Sands, just watching the elephants coming in and out and drinking, walking right past us. It was just insane. I mean, that's one of the special places on the planet. Wow. And then we rode back basically the next day.
Okay, jeez, because I remember last year speaking with you about the Kalahari, and it's a place that I still haven't been yet. I've been into Botswana, but the southern part, and I've been to the western part of Namibia, So I tried to get to the Makarikari fans, but didn't make it up there. But it sounds like if I ever want to go on a motorcycle,
I'm your man.
Yeah, you know where to go. And also to make sure I've got a support vehicle with water and fuel. I think that's the lesson that I learned there.
Yeah, look, with hindsight, if I'd actually gone onto the Pans with the guys, I wasn't too happy riding the cross runner on the Pans because it's not really dirt worthy. It's way more a Taro Tourer. Ryan and I ended up riding about 6Ks of deep sand on the bike the next day, and it worked beyond my wildest expectations. So we could have, but because of the heat and because of having experienced it before, I decided not to go that route. If I'd been with the guys, I would have, you know, said, whoa, you know, you started running ahead of yourself. But it happened so easily in the moment. And when you find out that you're in trouble, it's too late already, you know.
Yeah.
So all it ended well, but it could have been really ugly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've heard Alan's been there a few times, and he's told me a couple of horror stories of that place and how serious things get and how people don't really take it that seriously when they go there. And they're really not aware of the challenges and risk that are ahead of them. And I learned very quickly in his stories that that's a place to respect before you go there. So, but that makes me want to go there even more now.
It's so your kind of place.
And, yeah.
You would love that place. Oof.
Open up the borders. I'm ready.
Yes.
And Dave, you've had a lot of motorcycles, and from what I've heard, I've actually called you a few times for advice on locations. What's some of the places within Africa itself that you've ridden?
I think one of the most memorable trips, and it was largely because of the time that we did it, was in 1975. I had a 504 Honda, and a buddy of mine had bought one of the first GL1000 Goldwings. And we did about a 6,000K trip around the then Rhodesia. So we rode from here. We went through the border post at Messina, and then slept over in Bulawayo and got there at sort of 10 o'clock that night, because we had a bit of a scene. In those days, they used to have things called ghost cars. They follow you with a car, which sort of like duplicated your speedo reading, and then they'd say you were speeding, which obviously we were. I mean, to be a rocket scientist, wherever you rode in those days, you rode as fast as the bike could run. That was it, you know.
Yeah.
Traffic wasn't an issue, so what else was going to slow you down? So after almost blowing up his F4100, he eventually caught us, this guy, and he fined us more than our holiday money was, and we thought, stuff that anyway, and off we went, and we thought we'd deal with that when we came back. Which we did.
Yeah.
And luckily those things were all thrown out of court, so we never had to pay the fine. Otherwise, we'd still be in debt. But we sat in Bulawayo that night, and that was quite a hectic ride, because we had arrived from the border. We rode in the dark to Bulawayo. Now, the game was absolutely prolific in those days. And we arrived next to each other, and we fitted spots to both bikes with the spots fully on, so that you could see Buck that was going to jump across the road and this sort of thing. And it wasn't helped by the fact that we came across a Ford 20M that had hit a Warthog. The guys were coming down to the nine-hour race at Kyalami, which was, I think, the next weekend. And they hit a Warthog and, like, literally pushed the motor back a foot in the car. So it was totaled in the dark. So we eventually got to, much the worse for wear, got to Bulawayo that night. Slept over in a campsite there, and then rode to Vic Falls the next day. And the place was like a real enclave, you know. You had a sandbags with machine gun posts when you went over the bridge into Vic Falls. And, you know, whenever you went into a pub, the guys had Uzis and 9mm and 357 Magnums or whatever, just everywhere, because it was like this full-scale terrorist war going on, you know. And because of that, people were living it up because it could well be their last day. So there was this amazing kind of positive party vibe in the whole place. So we hooked up with some teachers training college students from Bulawayo, and we just had a week of wild partying in Big Falls, which was insane. I mean, the Big Falls, the Elephant Hills Hotel, had actually had a heat-seeking missile that had been fired at a Viscount coming into land at the Big Falls airport, missed the heat signal, and then locked on to the chimney of the Elephant Hills Hotel and went straight down the chimney and exploded in the kitchen of the hotel. So, I mean, the poor guy who was busy making his morning sadza got a bit of a shock, I reckon. But,
that's one way to get fucking up.
Yeah, I know. It was insane. But I don't know if you've ever been there, but also an amazing place. Wow. There's a golf course which they built, the Gary Player Design golf course there. And it's a regular thing for lion or buffalo or elephant to chase you off your off the courts, you know. So that is insane. And after that, we rode to what was then called Salisbury or Harare now, and then across to the Eastern Highlands, which is a lot like our sort of Lowveld, you know, Mpumalanga. And rode in the mountains there with a buddy of ours. We had a Honda 750, and you had to get petrol coupons back in the day. So we got extra coupons being tourists, and we could share some with old Mike, who lives down here now, Mike Taylor. And we rode that whole area flat, and then he went back to Salisbury, and we rode down to what was then Umtali, it's now Mutari, and then to, what was it called in those days? I don't even know what it's called today. But long and the short, to where the Zimbabwe ruins is. So we did that whole round trip, which in those days, I mean, there was a strip road between Umtali and Fort Vic, Fort Victoria was the name of the place. So you literally had two strips that you'd have to ride on the one. Cars, in other words, would travel with a track on each strip, and then whenever something came from the front, they'd each pull off so that only one wheel was on the strip and one wheel was on the dirt, and then go back onto the strip because there was such low volumes of traffic. Yeah. So on the back, you had to sit on this, like, not even, probably a one, at best, a 1 meter strip of tar. That could be a bit hairy, especially when you're riding into a sunset and can't quite see through the bugs in your visor. But yeah, incredible
day,
incredible ride, you know.
Sheesh. And you said that trip took you guys into Rhodesia. Is that correct?
Yeah. Which is, of course, Zimbabwe today, you know.
I've heard, so Rhodesia is Zimbabwe.
100% correct, yes. It changed, okay. The name changed to Zimbabwe when they got their independence.
Okay. I'm American. I'm a bit ignorant, so I've learned something new today. So thanks, Dave. And Dave, so you said this trip was in the 70s, mid-70s.
Yes, 1975.
In 75. And then after that, were you always doing motorcycle trips throughout the year? Were they like a couple times a year, every so often? How did that work?
Joe, in those days, I actually worked for a Honda dealership. They were a Honda dealership, but they were the BMW and the Kawasaki importers for South Africa. A business called Club Motors. It was a family-owned business by the Ludwig family, and they were the initial importers of Kawasaki and BMW motorcycles into South Africa. So I worked at their Honda dealership in Pretoria, I actually, as a result of that, I bought the first BMW R100 RS that came into the country. That was in 1976 or 77, I'm not sure. And I did a few trips to Rhodesia on that bike too. Some very, very high speed ones, because that was the first bike that came out with a full fairing.
Okay. Jeez. And I see Dave, your son, commenting quite a lot. That it sounds like you were a really rad dad to him. Like, did you take him on motorcycle trips as well, or is he taking the piss? Like, what's going on here?
No. He basically started riding a PV Yamaha when he was probably just able to walk, and so from 3 or 4 years old, he was on a bike. My dad had ridden Harleys in the war and such. But he never owned a bike, so I only got into this thing late compared to my son. But my son's ridden since he was 3-4 years old and never stopped. So because I normally had a couple of bikes, once I taught him to ride, he and I did a lot of trips down to ET, as we called it in those days, on Mpumalanga. And we do a lot of trips down there, sort of overnighters, you know.
Okay. And one place that I've always been very curious about in terms of the riding, not other stuff that's happened there, is Angola. Did you ever go riding in Angola, and when did you go there?
I never did. I did ride in Namibia, but okay. Angola was always a problem in the early days because there were a lot of landmines which they hadn't lifted yet from the war. And the infrastructure was very questionable. So that's probably the main reason for it. What I rather did was I went up through Botswana, through Zambia, went to Malawi, Lake Malawi. There was more certainty in terms of those sort of trips. So Angola is, funny enough, I'm not sure that it's a bucket list thing, but the more I see about it, the more I do find an appeal. I'm a desert man, Joe. Wherever there's a desert, I want to go and ride there, you know. It just has a huge appeal. Namibia needs a huge... In December, Dave and I were up there and in the Commerce Hochland, and that's a ride between Windhoek and Swakopmund, and then into the Nauklif National Park. We want to do some serious riding there. It's phenomenal. It's indescribably beautiful.
Yeah, that area, I just became familiar with it last year when I did the rock climbing trip to Spitzkoppen. Yeah. And I had always wanted to go to Namibia, and I got to see some really cool parts of Namibia, like driving out through that area, but there was still a lot that I didn't see. However, at least I got to become aware of the country and what it's like, and know that I'd love to go on a bike. I think to get there from Joburg is quite a feat. It would be nice to kind of get a little bit closer to that side so that you're riding, you can kind of start the riding there. But I think eventually, you know, Alan and I were talking about doing a Namibia trip on bikes sometime very soon. And it's been something that a lot of our guys really want to go and explore. And, you know, at some point, we've got to take people there. It just seems to be such a special place.
Yeah, no, incredibly so. In fact, these days it's a lot easier because you can go through Botswana on that Trans-Kalahari highway, which in the old days didn't exist. So we always had to take the long way around, and then it was 2,500 kilometers to Windhoek. Now it's about 1,700 km to Windhoek. So that's, you know, you can be into somewhere or Namibia in a day now. If you leave early morning and you ride reasonably hard, which you can because there's not much traffic and high-speed open road distances. You need a bit of fuel range, but it's doable. So incredible riding. It's off the charts. I had an interlude from the bike industry where my brother and I, for 2 years, we repaired First and Second World War graves all over the country, but particularly in Namibia. Because a little bit of First World War history, South Africa, what was then a German Southwest Africa, taking it from the Germans in the First World War. So the South African Defense Force went up and they had a campaign in what was then German Southwest Africa. And that's why Windhoek was actually given to South Africa as a bit of a protectorate. It's still South African territory, although it sits in the middle of Namibia. So we actually followed the course of that action along the railway line, where guys were killed, obviously because of the heat and so on, they'd have to bury them right away. So that's we had some amazing experiences there, literally sleeping in graveyards because we were doing the work.
Wow.
Come back, some amazing wildlife encounters and adventures. And that got me keen on riding there because I've visited all of those places.
Yeah, I mean, in Namibia, like, you know, Mersha was, I think, one of our second or third guests, and she was in Namibia on a dirt bike trip, and that looked proper remote. That looked like the Namibia that I want to go see. Like, just nothing out there. Nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Speaking of nothing out there and motorcycles, another trip that's incredible is to do what is called the Pella 4x4 Trail, which runs essentially from Springbuck along the Orange River all the way into Namibia to a place called Alsenker, and then you ride through a canyon and end up at where the warm water springs are. I'm trying to think of the name of the place. Near, very close to the fissure of a canyon. Absolutely mind-blowing trip on the bike. We rode there, three of us, where for 3 days we didn't see another human being, not a single solitary human being, sleeping, wild camping next to the river. It was just spectacular.
Wow.
I'm surprised that's never become a popular adventure bike ride, but the 4x4 car guys do it a lot, probably because there's so much sand.
What was the name of that road?
It's called the Pella Trail, Pella.
Cool.
In fact, the little town of Pella, it's this tiny little town, and it has this magnificent Roman Catholic cathedral standing in the middle of this little shanty town. It's bizarre, but they had a sort of missionary station there, and they eventually built this spectacular church just standing in a shanty town, which is maintained to this day. It's absolutely a must do to visit the little town of Pella.
I've got this link now. I found a description of the trail, so I'm gonna have to do some research on it. I think some of those areas sounded very familiar to me. I think when Alan and I did a trip out west, some of those areas sounded quite familiar. So I'm sure it was kind of nearby where we were. And Dave, we've been speaking a lot about Africa and your trips. Have you ever done any motorcycle trips outside of Africa?
Well, because of some of the bike launches we've been on, I've been to India. That wasn't on a bike launch per se. Simon and I went to visit TVS and Euro Honda in India. So we saw a little bit of India. It's a place I certainly want to go back, and very much after seeing some of the footage of your trip, it reminded me of what is a spectacular place to travel. So I'd like to go back there. But I've ridden Harleys in France from Marseille to Saint-Tropez and back. So we went the one way. We went through through Provence and then came back along the coast. That was just incredible. The Dynalope Glide S launch. Then I rode Harleys in Croatia, which is also a spectacular place to ride bikes. Low volumes, magnificent roads, beautiful little villages, marvelous places to stop for meals and things. And that event was called Ride, Ride, Slide. And on the last day, they actually had a whole lot of 750 Harleys converted into flat trackers.
Cool.
Yeah, and that they'd really, I mean, chain drive the whole bit. They were spectacular things. And Ruben Zaus, the World Superbike guy, he was actually the guy teaching us how to ride these things. And, I mean, he can pedal anything with two wheels and an engine. So that is incredible, absolutely incredible, just getting sideways on those things.
I want someone to teach me how to get sideways on a flat track.
Wow, incredible. Ask Mercer. She's a star at that.
Yeah, I think Justin taught her well.
Justin's your man. Justin's your man. He's proper.
Yeah, I kind of know a bit, but I don't have enough time to like play. I don't have a bike to like play around with to try to learn how to do that. But it's cool.
Seeing you on your Harley, I'm surprised.
I don't think you'll see me again on the Harley out at Stoffskop. I don't think. I've been very tempted.
Yeah.
But you know, if something were to happen to that bike on the track, you know, then it's, no, that's my ass. It, and it's not cheap to fix that bike. I think the once was enough. And for those who got to watch me going around the flat track on my chopper, woo, it was a sight. That was, was so much fun.
Completely. And then of course, we got to do a KTM 790 World Launch in Morocco, which is an incredible place to ride. You know, me and Desert's in Morocco, so that fitted the bill. And another KTM World Launch was in Peru, where the 13th stage of the previous year, the 2013, in fact, Dakar, we rode one of the stages of the Dakar on the 1290. And that was absolutely incredible, too. I mean, indescribable scenery, but definitely a place that I would love to go back to.
Yeah, Peru is it's a very, very special place. In terms of landscape, wow. It's a stunning
mind-blowing
site. Yeah. And where, like, did you have any trips planned, like, during this time? And also, like, where are you gonna, where do you want to go explore next?
The Tankwa Karoo is the Cedarburg. I'd like to go back to the Cedarburg. I have been there before, but I'd love to go back there at the end of a trip in the Tankwa. And then definitely that Thomas Hofland Road in Namibia. That's just got to get ridden. And I want to spend a night camping in the Naukluft, where there's not another human being within 100 Ks, and just flipping, watching that sunset with a fire going, and hopefully Dave is getting all itchy there, and I think he's up for that trip.
Is he going to join you?
Yeah, he'll join me for sure. Yeah, no, he shares my love for remote places and deserts.
Oh, good. And what's another bike trip that the two of you have done?
Well, we've actually done so many. Most of them were at a sort of a sport bike stage, where we would do very high speed trips down the 22 in Sabi Hazyview. And when we started riding Sabi Hazyview, there was no such thing as the 22. It was literally all the way to Hazyview. The road was like a billiard table, smooth, you know. So the corners just never stopped. So we got to know literally every bump and crevice in that road, because every second weekend we'd be down there. And Dave has got some not-so-good memories of that. He broke a VFR 400 literally in half there and lived to tell the tale. So that convinced him that adventure biking was maybe a better way to go than the sport biking.
I can't stomach the sport bikes. I do have a heavy foot and a heavy throttle hand, and I'm grateful that my Harley can only go so fast, and the Triumph that I've had can only go so fast. I do not trust myself on a sport bike at all. No way, Jose.
You know what, Joe? With my advanced years, a little bit of wisdom has snuck in there somewhere. And I like going quick, but I think because of the experience of years of riding, I kind of know my limits pretty well, and I don't need to overstep those, you know?
I remember we were I was on a launch of BMWs. I think it was their 1200 1250 range. It was I think three four months ago or something, and they actually no, it was before the bubble run, and they took us, we flew into Hazyview, I think it was Hazyview, whatever airport's around there, and we swapped out on different bikes, and one of the bikes, they were big bikes. And I just remember finally, like, getting to open up on a different bike on the 22. And I was following a guy named Charles. And I think he's done the GS Challenge before. So he could ride. And that was the second time, being on the 22, trying to keep up with someone. Like, yes, last year on my Harley, I could not keep up with Alan. But years past, I can keep up quite well sometimes. But trying to maneuver a bike like that on the 22, ooh, because I know that road, and it can get hectic if you're not comfortable with the bike. And I eventually had to back off at one point. I was like, no, not feeling too good about this.
Yeah, no, it can be very, very hectic. And the problem is you never know who you're riding with and what their level of expertise is and how well they know the road. I mean, there's some guys that live down there who ride that road literally every weekend. And to try and follow those sort of guys who know the road and its current conditions so intimately is just foolish. So sometimes you've got to just take your ego, polish it, put it in your pocket and leave it there.
That's it. That's it. I remember the point that I backed off. I was like, okay, boys, I'll see you at the stop street. Or I'll see you after that big flat, after a big straight section by the adventure park. I think I've actually caught up to them again there. Because on the straights, I'm on. But it was nice to like ride with someone who knows that road and to watch someone else just really power through. It's that area of Mpumalanga, I still say, is one of my favorite areas in South Africa to ride. And I think that's why I love the bubble run so much, is because there's so many different roads through Pilgrim's Rest, out to God's Window, the 22. There's such a wide range of roads in Mpumalanga. It's a fascinating place.
No, it is very special. And in fact, to go off on the Barberton side is not a bad idea too, because there's some nice roads, especially from an adventure bike perspective. Past that old, it was an asbestos mine back in the day at a place called Dipgazette on the Swaziland border. But it makes for absolutely spectacular adventure bike riding too. So next time you guys do your search of Swazi Gold, it's worth doing a little detour past there. Really, really amazing road.
So we go into Bulembu.
Yes.
And I think that factory is near there. Is that correct?
It is. In fact, when about probably 2 or 3 Ks before the Bulembu border post, a road turns off to your right and drops down into the valley. Just go down that road. It's short enough to be able to go down there and come back up again. But you have to go down to that Dipgazette mine. The road is magnificent going down there. That's another nice road that Dave and I did. He actually had 800 Tiger at the time, and we had a lovely ride down into that valley as well. But that's a must for you guys to do.
When we were there just before the lockdown, I saw that road, and there's something there was a sign for something down that road, and I remember both Alan and I rode past it, and we're both kind of looking, you know, like when you look to see what's down there. So I know exactly where you're talking about. So hopefully when we go back in October, the only problem is when we go that time of year, we're always pressed for time. The last two times we've gone there, we've gotten to the border post within a 15-minute window of it closing. So the only way to avoid that is that we leave Johannesburg super early in the morning. But we will have to go check that place out.
You must.
So, Dave, we've only got a few minutes left. And I want to make sure that I don't have to cut you off in the wrong spot. So I am going to say thank you and good night. It was so good to have you on the show and to hear some of your stories. Like I said in the beginning, I always enjoy seeing you wherever it is. If we're at the dealership or some bike launch, it's always great to see you. You've always got a smile on your face, and you've always got some great stories to tell. So I'm glad we were all able to listen to them tonight. And see little Dave's enthusiasm of his legendary dad.
Very kind words, Joe. Now it's just a privilege to have been able to enjoy motorcycles around Southern Africa for so many years, you know, and hopefully for a few more to come. And I hope I get to ride some of those with you, my friend. Namibia is waiting and Botswana is waiting for us.
Yeah, I can't wait. So everyone, thank you for joining us on episode 16, I think week 6. This podcast will be available tomorrow on Apple Podcasts. We will put out a link on the website. And we've got Rich Mulholland on Wednesday and Charlotte on Friday. I still don't know how to say her last name, but I'm looking forward to having both of them on the show. And can we all just get out and travel again soon? Can't wait. Okay. All the best, everyone. Much love.
Joe, thanks, Ed.